stay standing for just a moment. We're going to jump right into reading our sermon text. I think it matters in this way. Not just because, as we oftentimes say, that we stand to recognize in some way, form, or fashion that what we're reading is different than the onslaught of information and access we have to things to read and to consume on a day-in and day-out basis, but also because I think it's important to remind ourselves that like what we do with our bodies matter and that we worship with our bodies. It's why traditions for years and years and years have knelt during services to pray, and I wouldn't ask you guys to do this on this floor, but that is something that matters. Raising our hands, it is not just, you know, because that's what really charismatic people do and whatever, but it's like your body, it matters. We are material, physical beings, and worshiping and serving and having discipleship and formation both in our minds and in our bodies, it matters. There's an importance to it. And so that is why we try to include our bodies in our worship whenever we have the possibility. And I think this is one of the easiest ways to do that. So here our scripture this morning before we get into our time from our sermon. It comes from Ecclesiastes 3. It's going to be verses 1 through 14 if you want to follow along. Hear these words from the teacher of Ecclesiastes. There is a time for everything, in a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. What do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. And yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that the people will fear him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You guys can have a seat. As you can see, and as we mentioned, we are doing things ever so slightly differently this morning and having a different structure to the service. And in that of itself, you might feel like, oh, this is weird. You feel that in your bodies. You feel that in the way that you do things. And that's okay. There's a rhythm and a routine to how we do life. And the way we do these things, that they ingrain certain things in us. That's why these rhythms and these routines matter and why you should take stock and examine of your routines. And then next week, we're going to go in and start an 11-week series on Romans. And then we're going to have our Christ the King Sunday, which ends the liturgical calendar, and we'll move into Advent. And I was thinking this week, as Kyle and I were like discussing this, and I'm writing it on the board, Kyle's mentioned this before, and I've always felt it deep in my bones as well. There's like a disorienting nature sometimes to being in a vocational church ministry when you think in Sundays, because sometimes your year feels like it's 52 days, not 365. And oftentimes we are thinking about, when we're writing a sermon now in Labor Day weekend, you're thinking about where you're going in Christmas, and you're like, that doesn't make sense. For those of you that are in some of these like marketing jobs, if you're I see Whitney Derwachter nodding her head, she works in magazines, journalism, things like this. If you're in media, photography, video, you oftentimes will find yourself working on projects now that are Christmas-related or Thanksgiving-related, and it's disorienting. I remember Ann and I were asked to be a part of this photo shoot one time, and it was a party at someone's house
in August, like in the humidity and heat of August, and it was an ugly sweater Christmas party. And we were supposed to pretend in August, like it was just totally casual that we were hanging out in ugly Christmas sweaters. And I remember how disorienting it was. It was like weird. You're sweating. You're not supposed to be sweating in an ugly Christmas sweater, right? And even standing outside, like when we would take breaks because they'd have to like flip rooms and you'd have to go outside and sweat some more. And people would drive by and be like, why are there like 12 people in ugly Christmas sweaters just standing on, you know, like it was weird. You don't, your brain's like, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's disorienting. It's confusing. It's confusing because there's something inside of you that understands seasonality, that understands an order or a structure to things, that understands how time works. You understand that there's a way in which there's a right time for certain things to take place and there's a wrong time for certain things to take place. This is what the author of Ecclesiastes is getting at. This seasonality, this temporality. And you and I, we need to acknowledge that we are, as we say, temporal beings. We are finite creatures. And yet oftentimes we don't live in such a way. The reality of it is oftentimes we live disconnected from those realities of seasonality and temporality. We live, I like to say it sometimes, we are atemporal. We live in a way as human beings that oftentimes fails to acknowledge that the seasons we are in and the time we are in matters. We oftentimes will ask like what we are doing, where we're doing it, how we're doing it, but we fail regularly to stop and acknowledge that when we are doing it oftentimes matters. Seasonality matters. Temporality matters. Because we are finite beings created in a certain time and place. And faith, Christianity, invites us in to embrace that temporality, that seasonality, to embrace that where you are at matters. Because when you don't, you live disconnected or kind of like in a certain level of dissonance. There's a certain level of like something feels off and I can't quite explain why. Let me give you another example. This one may hit a little bit more home because I think we get that, right? We get seasonality in terms of weather. We get seasonality in terms of like stages of life. Especially in this room, you know, shout out to the new babies. And like you're, as a new parent and as an, or if you're in education or nursing, medicine, we have a lot of people in these fields. Like you get developmental stages, you understand that there's like, oh, you can't ask kids to do certain things. And there's like, if that doesn't happen in the right order, you can't ask adults to do certain things until they like deal with that and learn those things that were supposed to happen in their childhood. We get what it means to be a college student or a high school student. We get what it means to live at home and to live on your own and these steps that are supposed to happen. And when they don't happen, we come up with, you know, really fun, clever terms like arrested development and make TV shows about it. That this idea that, like, things haven't happened in the order that they're supposed to and we are unable to, like, become the functioning, ordering adults that, like, we're supposed to be. But that there's not, like, a universality to that. Though that is like a way that life goes, for some of us, we'll never experience those things. Some of you never went to college. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about, the like academic structure of undergraduate, graduate, postgraduate, doctoral work. You're like, I just thought it was all like after college and college, right? Like, there's names for these things. There's orders to it. Some of you may never like end up being married. Some of you may never have kids. And understand these like life stages. And that's because like there are these stages that matter, but there's a deeper thing that's happening that the author of Ecclesiastes is getting at. There's a universality to what he's talking about in the seasons. He's saying that this is true of all of creation and the fabric of being and the fabric of creation. We see it outside and we should begin to see it in us. And when you don't, things don't work like they're supposed to. You can't expect trees to bear certain kinds of fruit outside of certain seasons. And so, if you want to grab a hold of this in a different kind of way, I don't know how many of you have this experience. I have it occasionally, not a lot, but every once in a while, you will wake up, the alarm goes off, and you're like, what day is it? And you panic for just a moment. and you're like, and like it's like temporal vertigo, you know? You're like, where am I? You're in an episode or like a movie with Christopher Nolan directing, and the chair's been kicked and you've dropped into another world or reality, right? I feel like time and timelines in movies and TV shows is really like in vogue right now. And there's all these like things where they'll talk about when they're in these other timelines. Like there's ways where like it feels wrong or something feels off, like it's almost right. And Spider-Verse, they glitch. Like in other places, they'll begin to cease to exist if you're on the wrong timeline. And when we wake up in the mornings, we can feel that sometimes. For just a moment, you're like, what is happening? Like, where am I? Who am I? Because you have lost your sense of time. This week, you will have the conversation inevitably if you work in a corporate space. You have to talk to someone, and you will be like that commercial where it says, you know, you can't stop people from becoming their parents, but you can't help them save money on their home and auto insurance. But you're going to look at somebody on Tuesday, and you're going to be like, man, it really feels like a Monday, doesn't it? And you're going to be like, why did I say that? Like, am I really that, like, am I that much my dad? Like, okay, here we go. Like, it happens, right? But there's a truth to it. We say it because you are going to wake up on Tuesday and you're going to, like, all day. If you do something every Tuesday night during the week, you know, if you're part of your rhythm and routine is you go somewhere on Tuesday nights, this coming Tuesday, you are going to forget that you have that on a, like, multiple times throughout the day because it's going to feel like a Monday because we're going to have Monday off. Because your time is connected, and we forget things, and we forget how to function, and we forget what we're supposed to do when that gets off. I think the author of Ecclesiastes is offering to us and contending with us that there is a way in which you need to understand when you are as much as where or who you are. That your time matters. And that I think he's offering to us that there is a way in which that we like should take upon us this task of like spiritual timekeeping. And this like way of thinking about time beyond just the hours on the clock, but that the time and the space you are, like that it matters. Our histories matter. This is where I think 21st century Americans especially struggle with this more. We oftentimes want to be ahistorical, atemporal. We want to ignore that the history that has come before us like makes a difference on how we have the wisdom and the insight to handle a certain situation today, now. Because our time matters, but we forget that. We try to ignore time. We try to just pretend like it doesn't really have a bearing or effect on us. This is the gift of modern technology. It's because we're allowed to ignore time in our day-to-day basis. You ever stop and think about that like 100 years ago, you couldn't just stay awake all night long? I mean, I'm sure people still had like problems sleeping and people stayed awake late. Like, we're not the first people to do that. But like when before lights and power, like when it got dark, you went to sleep. There was no TV or phone. Like you could not master time in any kind of way. Like it was what it was. You didn't go outside when it was dark because there weren't street lights and all these different things. Like you just went to bed. Especially if you lived in a rural area and like in the country, you know? It's just like, well, I guess it's dark outside. We don't have any TV or anything, so we'll just go to bed. You couldn't like defy time. It wasn't even a concept we thought of. And now we regularly have articles being sent to us telling us that we can reverse our chronological age or our biological age. Like we can defy time. We can live forever. Just follow these 10 steps and eat this weird diet and probably pay a whole lot of money to somebody somewhere that's getting rich off of your desires. Because this is the way we think now. We miss that there is a temporality and a finitude to us and our being and our existence. And the author of Ecclesiastes is offering to us this opportunity to understand our temporal existence. To understand that there is a season and a time for everything. And this allows us to begin to have a grace and a kindness and a compassion for ourselves and for one another. When you begin to understand that time and season actually matter, you're being invited into wisdom. Because here's the rub of what we're reading in Ecclesiastes 3. It's some of that is completely out of your control, and some of that is being offered for you to figure out where you're at and when you are at. What season are you in? And are you aware of that season? Because you have a choice in it. It is not just determinism in Ecclesiastes 3. It is not just, well, there's a time for this and a time for that, and so good luck. Like, it's just going to happen to you. The teacher is inviting you into a life of wisdom and insight and saying, you will discern for yourself some of these things. And this is what we begin to do. We begin to be able to have grace and compassion for ourselves when we understand what season and time we are in. And you will also begin to have a grace and a compassion for someone else because maybe their choices and their actions are in a different time, a different season than yours. I find it strange and odd to sweat in a Christmas sweater. And yet our friends in Australia would say that's totally normal to sweat at Christmas. It is bizarre to them to think of like hot cocoa and these things that we think are normal at Christmas time. They drink fruity cocktail drinks, you know, and have this like totally different experience. Because they're in a different season. And that's no one's fault. It's out of everyone's control. And yet you have to have an awareness of what season you are in order for you to be able to respond accordingly and to live into the life that is in front of you. And this is what Ecclesiastes is giving to us. If you're familiar with the modern kind of movement towards mindfulness, I've talked about it before. I think it's really helpful for Christians. I think you can overplay it and kind of miss some of the like place that the Holy Spirit and God has for you. But there's this thing that you read a lot about it in sports psychology and academic and kind of like this like performance psychology, not just in like sports, but in other spaces and places in life. In this mindfulness, they'll talk a lot about being on time. And when you get off time is when like mistakes begin to happen. Not that you don't ever make mistakes when you're on time, but when you get off time especially is when mistakes can really start to happen. When you start to obsess over, why did I say that 30 minutes ago? Instead of thinking about, like, well, I said that, and so now I'm going to focus on, like, how to correct that. Or you start thinking about what people might think or what people might assume about me or what happens if I make that mistake and should I do it? And you're thinking about the future, anxiety, thinking about the past, shame and regret, instead of saying on time. And so in this sports psychology and this performance thing and just in normal life, Calm app, Headspace, all these different places, that are teaching you to breathe in a certain kind of way and teaching you to name and touch and smell and see so that your senses bring you back on time, it's because they've actually begun to do studies and research and show that there's real science to this, that when your brain can like be in the present, you are able to make better decisions, you're able to function better, you're able to like have clarity about things, and you also are able to like hold off on some of that like anxiety-inducing panic that can happen when you get off time. And so in golf, for example, just randomly, since like maybe somebody cares about it in this room, there's a way in which they will talk about this and they will say, like, you have to play the shot as it lies. And it does you no good to continue to think about why did I end up here or whatever you might be in your hobby, your activity. It does you no good to obsess over the fact that you have a bad lie. The only thing you can do is play the shot that is in front of you. And you can't obsess over what will happen next. You have to be present. You have to be on time. Maybe one of you or two of you have been like waiting for Labor Day weekend and you're like, I'm going to start running in September. And you're like, but I'm really nervous that on Tuesday morning I'm going to run and somebody's going to judge me. They're going to make like an assessment of my running on the side of the street. And a well-meaning, kind friend will look at you and say, nobody's going to judge you. They're lying to you. People sit at their stoplight and they judge your running form. It's just, it is. It is what it is, okay? Like, it's just the realities. People see people running and they make assessments and they make judgments of, why would somebody do that? That's weird. Or why are they doing it that way? Or why is that random adult male walking in with his children carrying a kettlebell in his hand? Like, why would somebody do that? Like, that's weird. But you can't change that. So this mindfulness, that's a future thing, a past thing. When you are doing this, what they're inviting you to do is to accept the realities as is. They're not asking you to ignore them. They are not saying, pretend like that bad shot didn't happen and just give yourself a good shot. Pretend like those people aren't going to judge you. That doesn't help. It disconnects you. It makes your brain worse. It makes your ability to be on time and to be present worse. And so when we begin to talk about this thing of being on time and this spiritual timekeeping and this reality that you are a temporal, finite being, what it is inviting you into is to acknowledge the difficulties of the past and the shame and the regret that you might start to want to feel. And it's forcing some of us in this space over the last, you know, maybe 8 to 10 years, we've been on this journey collectively, I think together as a society, but also some of us like just in this room, quite literally, we've been on this journey together of like recognizing like the sins of our fathers matter, both the sins of like my real father, but also then like that collective idea that like we here as a majority cult, most of us, majority culture, have benefited from the mistakes and the sins of the majority culture before us. But that does not make us guilty, and we do not need to carry the shame and the burden of that guilt, but it does mean that we have to recognize that the things of the past change the way that we interact with the present. You can't ignore that. You can't escape that idea or that reality. And I could spend a lot of time talking about this, and I would love to, but I'm going to choose not to, because I don't think that's the sermon for this morning. This mindfulness idea, this practice, if you want to talk to me about it, I love it. I'm like into it. I do my box breathing in the morning and work on like my tapping. If you've never tapped, it's an amazing way to calm your anxiety and to bring you back to the present. Name what you see and smell, taste, all these things. It's good, but it's not the point. The point of Ecclesiastes, and I name all that, is to see that this is true on this individual and this macro level, and he's inviting you into this like philosophical, cosmic understanding of time and space and your place in it. And so what I think is the gift of Christianity and the gift of the realities of all of us in this space is that we begin to see that if this is true, if there is this like cosmic story, this time, and that we are a part of it, and that it is necessary for us to find our place in it, that we begin to see that we are bigger than ourselves. That we begin to see that there's a way in which we are a part of a bigger story, a bigger narrative, a bigger history. That there's a way in which the story of God and the people from Genesis to Revelation through 2,000 years of church history up until now, like that's part of our story in our life. That you here in this space are a part of something more than just like what is happening in your day-to-day life, but you are a part of a bigger story. And we should find comfort in that. We should find some peace in that. We should find a way for us to be able to be caught up into that. But when you do such a thing, when you begin to realize this, what you will find is that in your finite, temporal, seasonal life, you will begin to feel small. And I think that that's a lot of our rejection and pushback towards this. You will find that there are certain things out of your control and out of your ability to like manipulate and guide, you will begin to find that there's a way in which that you maybe aren't all that important as you think you are. As I've quoted before from Richard Rohr, that you don't matter. You're not in that kind of way. You're not the center of the world. And guess what? You're going to die. And your life here now is going to come to an end. And the teacher of Ecclesiastes is going to tell us this. He's going to care about this cosmic seasonality that we are a part of and wrapped up into, that we are finite beings, that much of what we experience and see in life will cease to exist at some point in time, and that you are just a part of this bigger thing, and yet also on the individual level, you still have some agency and some choice, and that you don't give yourself to cynicism and just like, well, nothing matters then if it's all just kind of going to end and, you know, I'm not that important, I don't matter. Like there's this way in which as you begin to understand that you can sing the songs that we sang this morning about how much like God cares about us in the same way that he cares about the sparrow, right? Like that acknowledging our finitude and our smallness, acknowledging our place in this cosmic story does not mean that like we just, oh, well, you don't matter at all, that it's all pointless, but that there's actually a profound gift in this. And that you do matter, and you are seen, and you are loved, and you are cared for. It's just not all about you. It doesn't revolve around you. And so in Ecclesiastes, the author or the teacher, he's going to use this term, this Hebrew word over and over again, not in our passage, but throughout the book, called Havel. And it's where we get this translation oftentimes when we talk about Ecclesiastes, that meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. And that is a translational choice because it gives some meaning to that word. But a direct translation of the Hebrew would be either like mist, vapor, smoke. It's like, and that's kind of like more abstract. Because what the author of Ecclesiastes is trying to tell us and get at is that our life and much of our choices and the things that we do, they're mist, they're vapor. Meaning you can't hold on to them and grab them and keep them forever. There's a like vagueness to them. There is this thing, there's a temporary aspect to it. It will dissipate. It will evaporate. It will end. But I think when we hear meaningless, what we go to is cynicism or just kind of like, well, none of it matters. Who cares? Let's just move on with our lives. If it's all going to end, if it's all just meaningless, then we don't need to actually do anything. But that's not the call of the gospel or of our life. It's being caught up in this to recognize that we aren't the center of the universe, that it's not all about us, that we're a part of something bigger, a larger story. But then also it's a call to understand that that cosmic timeline story is true, that we are caught up in this story of the people of God and we find ourselves in this place. But then also it's necessary for you to do the work of understanding where your story is, where your life is. That the choices of, like I said, your very real parents and your friends and your siblings, and that if you're married, your spouse, like these stories begin to intersect and interweave with one another. And our stories matter. Your story matters. And understanding where your story is, it begins to bring grace and compassion to yourself and to others, as I've said, and as I would contend, and as I've experienced in my own life. There's a way in which understanding the seasonality and the place that I'm in, it allows you an objectivity and a grace to see the things around you and to understand the things around you. And I think the real invitation of it that the author of Ecclesiastes is going to want to get at is that there's a way in which it allows to steal a, you know, psychology term, the ego. Like the ego can begin to like be put in its proper place. The self-grandizing that we do, this thing where we think that like we have to, you know, accomplish this, we have to be perfect at this. And if you accept the seasonality, temporality, understanding where you're at along on the journey allows failure and shortcomings and hardships to teach us something and not just be a wall that we're constantly trying to like bust through or get around. And let me say this, it's not that failure and hardship and heartache, that these things have some sort of magical power that like everybody has to go through, and if you don't go through it, you can never achieve this thing on the other side. But it seems to be in our human experience that these failures, shortcomings, heartaches, difficulties, griefs, that if you do not experience them, you're unable to ever see the things about yourself that maybe you would have otherwise ignored. Like it reveals something about who we are in our being, in our essence, and what needs to be transformed and what needs to be offered to the Lord to be shaped and formed into something new so that we can become who we were always already becoming, who we were already meant to be in creation under who God has for us. And so the author of Ecclesiastes is saying, listen, there's a season and a place for everything. There's a time and a rhythm and a routine for all things under the sun, and you are being invited into this. You are being called to recognize this and to come into a wisdom and an understanding of when and where and what you are doing and who you are becoming. And to have this grace for yourself and for those around you, and to allow yourself, when doing this, to step into a deeper and a wider and more mysterious way of living and existing. To go on this journey where you begin to not try to hold on to things quite so tightly. And you begin to see that the Lord is always revealing himself anew and afresh. And that Jesus is inviting you into a different way of being and existing. And so there's a season to this. And we begin to ask ourselves, what season are we in? And we don't get so defensive and like, ugh, like why would you do that? Well, they're in a different season. You're in a different season. I got to do this a lot on sabbatical. I got the opportunity to reflect and to kind of like, assess the seasons that we've been in and to think about the seasons that we're going to. It was a gift from the Lord, and the Lord meets you in those places. And it was amazing to get to look back and to just see the kindness of the Lord, like over the course of like the last 10, 7, I would do these little things where I'd kind of just move it in and like look and see, like, last 10 years, like, this is all the way the Lord has provided and cared and, like, been there for us. And I met with a spiritual director and went to, like, on a spiritual retreat with him. And he invited me onto this, like, reflection process where we went back and we looked at, like, what was going on in our life. And he said, take the time. And I was by myself. He kind of started me, and then I spent a few hours all alone. He said, take the time to look back on your life and see those places where you're most frustrated with yourself, or you experience the most grief or heartache. And just ask yourself, where was the Holy Spirit in that? Where was the Lord in all of that, like in that season, in that moment? And how would the Lord give you grace in that? And how would he call you to see the mistakes you've made, and instead of feeling shame and heartache in it, to go, yeah, that was a mistake. Or yeah, that was a failure. And yeah, there was how the Lord covered me in that sin. Or there's how the Lord, like, held me through that turmoil or that heartache. And to ask yourself, like, what would the Lord have for me as I move forward and think differently of it? And the coolest part about it for me was that in all of that, and in this season of sabbatical that we came out of, is this, like, objectivity that I think the Spirit has given me to be able to see, like, how much of life is a gift. How much of what's in front of us is just something that, like, is just pure gift. And that's what the author is saying. After going through all of this, there's a season for this, there's a season for that, there's a time for this, there's a time for that. He wants to get to those four verses that says that what I have come to is that there is a way in which humanity is meant to enjoy, to find meaning and purpose in the toil. Everything up until this point has been vapor about toil. And you should feel this juxtaposition of the author in that moment of going, whoa, wait, like, the toil was always bad. The toil is supposed to be good now. What? I'm supposed to find delight in the toil? I think what he's saying is when you have this objectivity and you see life as gift and you see that eating and drinking and being friends and taking advantage, or not even taking advantage, but just experiencing the gift of life that is in front of you, there is a way in which you can embrace the hardships and the failures and the difficulties instead of attempting to constantly, like, push against it or fight against it, swim against the current that is moving you somewhere, kick against the goad, as you will. There's a way in which you can accept it. Now, hear me out. This doesn't mean, again, that you just, like, pretend like everything's fine and hunky-dory, you know? Like, oh, well, everything's great because, like, we're all going on this, like, cosmic journey and everything's going to end really well. You actually, I think, when you begin to accept this and you begin to name your own finite role in existence, you begin to name the season you're in and your temporality and your seasonality, that there's actually a way that you're invited in to feel the grief and the sadness and the sorrow of it at a deeper level. When there are failures and there are shortcomings. When you acknowledge where you're at and you're really honest about the fact that maybe you're in a barren time. Maybe you're in a drought. Or you're in the winter. And things don't feel as pretty as you thought they should have been. There's a way in which you begin to be honest about who you are and you stop trying to control and prevent the inevitability of the march of time and think that you are supposed to be in charge of everything and in the center of everything, that you're able to actually go, like, yeah, that's, like, I actually wanted that for, like, some kind of, like, selfish, egotistical reasons. You're able to begin to be honest and not see that honesty about yourself as, like, some sort of shame or shortcoming, but just naming, like, this, you're human. You have human desires, and that's okay. And you can be really sad about things not going exactly the way that you thought they would go or should have gone. And you can be frustrated by the fact that you tried to do things right, and everybody told you if you just work hard and do everything the way you're supposed to, that life will work out the way you want it to, and that's just not true. We can't control time. We can't control life and its inevitabilities the way we want. And so I think that that's where we bounce back and forth as humans, is between trying to control time and ignoring it altogether. We try to prevent its inevitable march, or we just kind of go throughout our lives, head in the sand, pretending like that doesn't really exist. And when we do that, I think we miss on a profound opportunity to participate and be caught up in this grand story and this eternal stream that God is calling us to. That's why the author of Ecclesiastes is going to say, there is eternity in our hearts. In creation, there is something that has been placed in them. And he says it not quite cynically, but with some heartache. It's not happy-clappy when he says this. He says there is all of this seasonality and temporality in life. And you're going to experience it. And yet, and everything that God's made is beautiful. And yet, there will be this thing that kind of is a permanent desire or ache that is in you. There's a longing. Paul's going to talk about that. It's something that reminds us that we are not made for this world. And a lot of the sins and the evils of the world that we have seen and the injustices and some of our own like kind of shortcomings and ways in which we feel like we repeat this cycle. God knows I feel like I repeat a lot of cycles. A lot of it is our failure to acknowledge this thing in us, this desire and where it comes from, and it's our attempt to fill it in all the wrong ways or to just leave it unfeathered and unchecked and just to kind of like, oh, no, I don't have any desire. I don't have, like, no, that's not me. I'm just fine. I'm just going. And it creates all sorts of problems because it creates a dissonance with us and where we're at and who we are and what we're, like, experiencing in front of us. And I think the author of Ecclesiastes would never ask you to pretend like that pain and that suffering doesn't exist. He would never ask you to just sort of, like, gloss over it. He'd invite you to feel it, name it, acknowledge the grief and the pain of it, and to know that that's part of being human. And yet, in the midst of it all, there's a profound gift of life that is available to you. I think this is the gift of the gospel. This is what Jesus did. Is he came down, infinite being, took on our station and our form, entered into a finite life, where time marches in only one direction, and he participated in it. And he knew, and he tasted, and he saw the suffering of it, the hardship of it. And he also made a way for us to interact with and participate in the infinite life that we're promised and that we feel. This desire, this thing inside of us, it's like a homesickness. It's like a thing that we, oh, like where it pushes us to go and seek and to have adventure, and it also calls us back, pushes us out and in at the same time. It's an energy that goes two ways, and it's all the while trying to get you to see that you are not created for this life, and yet in this life through Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection and the way in God which he wants to come and partake in your life and in this time and now, that you are meant to experience a peace in the midst of that turmoil and that frustration. And so that's what Jesus offers to us. And what Ecclesiastes is trying to get us to see is that we have a season and a station and a time, and that this is where we begin to see things like liturgy and rhythms and routines and formation, because they call us back to recenter and to restory and to retell and realign. And to again and again have the honesty and the gumption and the ability to name where we are at in our station and our place in life and when we are at. And simultaneously to experience the fullness and the abundance and the infinite that is in us as we are created in the image of God, who is outside of time. But only he gets to be outside of time. That's not our role as the created. And yet we spend much of our time ignoring time or trying to master time. But we have a gift and an opportunity, as the author of Ecclesiastes lays before us, to find joy and hope, to find peace and comfort in the toil, in this life that is in front of us, but to never let go of that eternal kind of ache that we find in us. And so as the band comes up, we move to our time of communion. I'll invite you, as we always do, to come down and take a piece of the bread and the cup. Go back to your seats and hold on to those elements. But in this moment, I think what we are invited into and what we're able to have the chance and the opportunity to do is to name where we are at in our season and our station, to name our limited realities of being human, and to lay down our attempts and our tries to master and to control and to prevent and to predict and to lay down our desire and our need for, you know, this kind of assurance and confidence of knowing exactly where we're going to go and exactly what we want to do and exactly what's going to happen, and to accept what has been and what will be and the possibilities of it, and to say that regardless, we're going to engage and experience God in the here and now, that we are going to realize that there is some paradoxical way in which we are finite and yet also have the opportunity to experience the infinite. And that was Jesus in one body. He somehow was both. And he invites you into that, to come and to taste and see that the Lord is good in the here and now, in the land of the living, and to simultaneously long and desire for what is still yet to come. And so the invitation in communion is to come and to name your station, your season, your place, your time, and to also be reminded of the one that is outside of time and the way in which he created opportunities for you to experience his goodness and his grace and his kindness, so that you might then be able to offer that to others and give grace and kindness and hope to a needing and wanting and waiting world. And so I invite you, as the band plays the song, to reflect on this, to think about this, and to come, take a piece of the bread and the cup, and go back to your seats. Wait for us to all come and take communion together, and to think about that this is who Jesus is, this one that was both and inviting you into more, to come and to receive the gifts of God for the people of God.